All rise. Court is in session. Call now, 215-263-1079. Court Radio 107.9 WRNB is on. Brought to you exclusively by the law offices of Silvers, Langsam, and Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com.
And a very good, gloomy, rainy, scary-looking Sunday morning to you. It's the 2nd of August, 2009. I'm Tiffany Bacon. I am your co-host for Court Radio, and we welcome you to the program this morning. This wouldn't be a legal show without legal advice, and of course, we have the one, the only Dean Weitzman here, and of course, the one and only David Rappaport. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Hello, Tiffany B.
Hello, hello. Now, don't forget, listeners, this is the time where you can ask your legal questions. You get at least an hour once a week to ask any question you like of a legal nature, of course, and we're here to help you. Give us a call, 215-263-1079, and again, 215-263-1079. Hey, fellas, how are things?
Good morning, Tiffany. I'm going to be on guard today. I got a feeling that people are going to, well, because they're sleepy and they're in bed and they're it's rainy out, they're going to try to double dip.
A lot of double dipping today.
Well, you know.
Yeah, it's not happening. It's not happening. So, folks, you know, you can do your best, try as you may, but one question is all you get here at Court Radio. Mm-hmm. And you could save the next one for next week. Yep. Anyway, so it's not a real nice morning out today, but you know, you got to get some of these mornings and appreciate the beautiful ones.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we have had a pretty decent weather.
Oh man, this has been really a good summer. I mean, it hasn't been too hot this summer.
No, you know, this week definitely was a little warm, a little sticky, a little muggy. And if you delay your going outside for right now, because it depends on where you are. We have spots of rain, really ominous clouds hanging out, at least where we are right at the moment.
Yeah, I was checking the weather out, and I heard that we could get upwards of 2 inches in an hour.
Ooh.
Flash flooding.
Yikes.
Be careful.
Yeah.
Take to higher ground.
And
stay in bed if you can. You know, there's some interesting legal little snippets I picked up this week that we're going to talk about initially.
Mm-hmm.
The first one, hot off the presses, last night in Upper Darby, a young man was taken to the Upper Darby Turf Club with his mom and dad.
Mm-hmm.
When you say young, what do you mean?
13, I believe he is.
Mm-hmm.
And he got bored. He got bored of the gambling his parents were doing, so he went back out to the car and was in the car playing around and drove a brand new Durango off of the fourth floor of the garage.
Oh.
Oh. Now, the good news is, if the news can be trusted, and I believe they can, he's okay.
I was about to say,
not seriously injured. The Durango is gone.
Oh, my gracious.
It turned over on its hood, dropped four stories, and the whole rear section was just crushed out. I did that when I was a kid. I remember, not, of course, on a fourth story.
I was about to say, you drove off the fourth floor of
a
building.
Kid.
No, but I do remember being out in the car and playing around. And back then, you know, cars weren't like they are today.
Mm-hmm.
And they had that little shifter on the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm.
And we were playing patty cake or something, my cousin and I. And we hit the shifter. Poof, it went down into the drive mode. Didn't have emergency brake set, and we just slid down the street until some kids playing in the neighborhood saw us and grabbed the back of the car and stopped it.
Wow. They grabbed the back of it. Were they Hulk?
I know.
Would you live in a
power
area with radioactivity or something?
No. We grew up in Philly. You know, we were strong then. Strong in Philly.
You know, if I could put a legal spin on this story you said, I was under the impression that most garages, if not all of them, need to have buttresses or things that don't allow cars to fly off of the floors.
Barriers.
Yeah, well, you know, they have either, you've seen them with the concrete barriers or the
Yeah, I don't know. I you know, they did not say whether he had the keys, started the car, and like slammed it into drive, and, mm-hmm. and you know, was going 60 miles an hour out of the fourth floor.
So exploded out of like a Lethal Weapon or something.
Right, lethal. Right.
Wow.
Yeah, this kid might have a future as a stunt person.
You know what? Well, I'm just glad he's okay, because that's really crazy.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
We all are. I mean, thank God he is generally okay and not seriously injured. I see we have a caller, Ms. Tiffany.
Yes, we do. This is Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. We do welcome your legal questions right now. 215-263-1079. Carmen is calling in from Delaware County. Carmen, good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What's your question, ma'am?
Yeah, my question is, my mother has been in a nursing home for about a year and a half now, and she's to the point where she has exhausted all of her income, her annuities and insurance and all that stuff. So now the nursing home has sent me papers to sign over all of her money to them. Now, she has, I don't care about Social Security, that's government money, and I understand that, but she also has a pension check. She was a former teacher, and so she has a check coming from PSERS every month. Now, can I just write them that check, or is it necessary that I turn those funds over to the nursing home?
Well, like all things of this nature, a lot will depend upon the contract. When Mom went into the nursing home, she, maybe you, signed a document, and the document dictates the relationship between her and the nursing home. And so always the best advice I can give you is to go back to that document. Oftentimes, and I don't mean this to be a derogatory comment, we sign documents and then we put them away and we forget kind of that we signed them or that they're important, and that these types of questions should be answered by a review of that document. Because if it's not addressed in there, then the answer is you don't have to turn anything over. But I'll bet you that if they've crafted a proper contract, that this arrangement is actually dictated, and they say in that contract you must do X, Y, and Z, and Z is turn over everything to us immediately.
Okay.
But anyway, go back and look at that contract and read it carefully. And if you have any questions once you've read that contract, by all means, give us a call during the week at 215-227-2727.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, and have a great Sunday.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, Carmen. This is Court Radio on 107.9 WRNB. Court Radio is brought to you by the law offices of Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, better known as MyPhillyLawyer.com. We have Raymond calling in from Philadelphia. Raymond, good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning, and thanks for the show.
It's our pleasure. Rain Man.
I've never hit the lotto, though, and I've never been to Vegas. So.
That's all
right. Give us your question.
My question is this. I've been in a situation where I was expecting to pay my auto insurance with a check by phone from my bank. And by accident, I believe two checks came in at one time, and one of the payments, which was the one for the auto insurance, didn't get out. I was on my last day of the 30 days for the state to require you to have your auto tags returned if you've been uninsured for 30 days. I called the auto insurance insurer because they didn't send me a card. And while at the motor vehicle place to get my new stickers done, I was informed that I was uninsured for the last 5 days. So now I'm in a situation where I may lose my ability to drive for 90 days or more. Because the check never went through. If I prove that I attempted to do it on time, is it a possibility that I can get that waived by the state for taking the tag?
Well, the answer is probably not. That's an administrative procedure, not one that is mandated by a judge. And you can request an administrative hearing.
That's what I thought.
and I, the question that I just don't have the answer to right this second is whether the request for an administrative hearing will stay the registration suspension.
I believe it does.
Okay. If it does stay the suspension, then you'll buy yourself some time at the very least, and you'll have an opportunity to go before an administrative hearing officer and make your case. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that it's certainly something that you need to do if you still need to get around with your car and can't be without it for the 90 days.
Yeah.
And so that's I would tell you that you want to look at the documents very carefully and in there. And again, very important, make sure everything's in writing and that you send all of your requests by certified mail, return receipt requested, so that you have proof that you sent it. Keep a copy for yourself, and request an administrative hearing, and don't send your tags back.
Mm-hmm. Now, can I get represented with that, or do I have to do that on my own?
You can get represented for that, and I have heard of people who have had attorneys go to the administrative hearing with them. Of course, it's going to be, you know, there's going to be an added expense to that. Mm-hmm. I would think that, you know, it's probably going to be at least a minimum of 3, maybe as much as 5 hours of an attorney's time. Okay. And so it'll depend on how much the hourly charge is. And right. it's not going to be a inexpensive item, let's put it that way.
Well, I haven't been involved in something like this since the 80s. And back then, you would file in the Wanamaker's building and have a hearing. I'm not sure if it was in the Wanamaker's building or in City Hall. And at that time, they had a panel, and the panel made the decision whether or not your claim was legitimate or not. But I haven't done that in such a long time.
Yeah, I don't
want to do it by myself.
I don't believe that. I know that that doesn't exist anymore, at least in the Wanamaker building. And I don't think in City Hall either. But
I think that these hearings are held I think that they were, if I'm not mistaken, I think they were held either at the local licensing bureau,
right?
You know, where you go for your driver's exam.
Traffic court, yeah.
No, not traffic court.
Where you go for your driver's
exam. The photo center. The
DMV. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Either there or in traffic court. Yeah,
okay.
One or the other. But when you find out what's going on, give us a call back and give us an update on this.
I'll get all the documents, and I'll do just that.
All right, thanks, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Raymond.
Thank
we also
you.
Have Anthony calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello, Anthony.
Good morning, sir. I have a question. My mom passed away a few years ago, and I became exempt from her estate. And Harrisburg, the third party said that my mom had owed them, just like the lady that just talked to you, had owed them some money from a third party when she was in a nursing home.
Right.
She had owned her home. And when she got into the nursing home, then she went to live on her own at a different apartment building. They sent me a letter saying that I owed them such and such $1,000. How do I go about, like, am I really responsible for that bill?
Well, okay, generally speaking, when somebody passes, their last bills are a legitimate claim against the estate. So if they have any assets of the estate before a beneficiary gets to take money from the estate has to pay any bills, last health bills, nursing home bills, whatever legitimate bills there are. Now, that's not to say that you can't dispute a bill, but if the bill is indisputable, then the answer is, if mom had assets when she passed, then those assets have to be used to pay down any legitimate bills. Now, the question is, where exactly does that dispute, where is it heard? And that's in orphans court,
There is one other thing, though.
Yes.
If the estate was set up properly and advertised and so forth, they only have 1 year, the creditor only has 1 year to make their claim against the estate. If a year goes by and they didn't say, hey, we are owed money from this estate, then they can't raise that. So
So that's the question, I guess, is whether an estate was raised.
Exactly.
When your mom died, did you go to the Register of Wills in Philadelphia and raise an estate and become the official administrator for her estate?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So what David is saying is that 1 year from the date that you raised that estate, the creditor has to come and make their claim. And if they did do that, if they put you on notice of a claim and they put the court on notice of a claim, and you dispute that claim, then it's the court that will hear that dispute and decide whether it's a legitimate claim or not. If it is legitimate, then it's owed from any assets. If she owned a home and there was some value to that home, then they can get paid from that money before before you get what's coming to you.
So how do I go about finding out whether or not my year had went past? Because I do have all the paperwork from the head of estate when I first filed it, and then when the people first sent me this letter stating that they that I supposed to owe the money, because my mom was also
Let me just ask one question. What was the date on the letter that you got from them?
My mom passed away in 05. I got the letter like about 06, 07.
Well, 06 would be within 1 year of her passing. Well, that's one of the key factual issues is, you know, if you raised the estate, let's say, in October of 05, and you got that letter before October of 06, then they're in time.
There is a caveat. If you find that it's over a year, that doesn't necessarily mean they don't have a claim. And what I mean by that is that as the administrator of the estate, you have certain obligations. One of them is to advertise. When you open the estate, you need to advertise the estate. A lot of people don't do that, but it needs to go into a local paper saying so-and-so passed away, and here's the date that I became the administrator, and if you have any claims, notify me or my attorney, whatever. If you didn't advertise
the estate...
Okay, if you did not do that, then they're not bound by that 1 year. They can argue they had no way of knowing that she passed away. So then it may extend more than a year, and now you're looking at that issue. So,
but once I did become administrator of estate, that's when I started getting letters.
Okay.
All right, well,
sounds
then
like it's within a year then.
Yeah, it's probably
anyway.
In time. But then the question is whether it's a legitimate claim,
right.
And you can still argue it's not, and then there would be a hearing, and they'd have to present evidence as to whether it was legitimate. And really, at this point, Anthony, you know, it may be necessary for you to have counsel involved in this matter.
That was my next question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You couldn't have had another question. I'm sorry, Anthony. Only one question.
But we snuck
it in for you.
All right. Thanks and have a great day, Anthony.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye. This is Court. Bye-bye. This is Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 WRNB. You can call in with your legal questions at this time. 215-263-1079. That's how you can reach us in studio. Now, if you're sitting back and you're wondering what to do if you or someone close to you are involved in an automobile accident, a slip and fall, personal injury, or medical malpractice, you can contact the law offices of Silvers, Langsam & Weitzman, the home of My Philly Lawyer. They have over 100 years of combined experience, and they will aggressively fight for you. You could call them tomorrow morning for your free personal consultation. Now, remember, they don't get paid until you get paid. You can call them tomorrow at 215-227-2727 or visit them online at myphillylawyer.com.
You know, that reminds me, Tiffany, when you were just saying that, Reed, that I got a call yesterday from a new client whose two children, and I'm not going to use names, there's confidentiality issues here.
Right.
But two children were involved in a car accident. They were almost adult children.
Okay.
They were the rear seat passengers in a car that was rear-ended in a three-car pileup Friday. I understand. I was out of town Friday, but I understand you had a little bit of rain on Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So they get into this accident and they're injured, and their mom called to ask if I could represent them in this claim and to ask what their rights were. And I asked her, the first question was, do you have insurance? Do you own a car? And she said, but of course I do. But why? What's that have to do with their claim? They weren't in my car. And I had to break the news to her, as I have before, but seems like it still doesn't get through to people, that your tort selection follows you. So these two children who are members of her household, when she chose, whatever tort selection she chose, be it limited or full, that made her children limited or full. And when they're out in their friend's car, they're still limited or full based on mom's choice.
Okay.
And so, you know, you're, when you choose limited tort, it doesn't only apply to the events in your own car. And so these two kids are limited tort. And now they may be able to make a recovery if their injuries are serious. But if they're not serious injuries, then they've waived their right to recover for all the pain and suffering they may experience nonetheless. And so, and the other caveat, as David has used twice today.
Yes.
All right.
Latin.
Little Latin Sunday mornings. The other caveat is that mom's insurance is going to pay for their medical bills. They weren't in her car. She has nothing to do with this accident, but we are a no-fault state. Pennsylvania is a no-fault state. And what that means for all of us is, regardless, if we have a car in our household that's insured, and regardless of where we are, whether we're a pedestrian struck by a car, whether we're passengers in our friend's car, our insurance always pays for our medical bills. And so we're going to go back to mom's insurance to determine tort selection and back to mom's insurance to pay for her kids' medical expenses.
Gotcha.
It can, that cannot be used as a basis for your insurance company to raise your rates. People, fear not. Be fearless in this regard. Your insurance can only go up if you have been charged with an accident. Otherwise, it cannot be used to raise your rates merely because you're using your insurance to pay for medical expenses related to an accident.
Embrace your insurance. This is why you pay your premiums. Get to use it.
Right.
I mean, how many years go by that you don't use it? And Dean, you'll agree with me. People years and years pay premiums, never use it, and then they come to the office with an incident, and they're afraid to use it. What
Absolutely.
Are you afraid of?
Absolutely.
You've only paid them tens of thousands of dollars. Get some of it back.
Right.
To help you. I mean, this is why you have it.
But it's really auto insurance
that has
messed with our psyche. Because when you're about to go see family doc, you don't start shaking that you're going to use your Blue Cross and Blue Shield card.
Right.
And what will that mean if I use my card?
Right.
Will they renew me next year? Will it cost me more? No, you don't give it a second thought. You whip out that Blue Cross and Blue Shield card. You slap it down and say, I'm covered. And you go run into the hospital, the doctor, and you don't give it a second thought. Right. Well, when it comes to the automobile injuries, the auto insurance is your Blue Cross Blue Shield. The auto insurance is your Blue Cross Blue Shield. So don't give it a second thought. If you're injured, get treatment, and you will have to pay for that treatment by your own insurance. All right, I'm off of my soapbox. If that raises anybody's blood pressure this morning, because sometimes I get clients who really get upset with me. They say, look, I'm not using my insurance. I say, you have to. You don't have a choice. If you don't use your insurance, the medical bills will go unpaid.
Right. There's this preconceived notion. They say, wait a minute. We had nothing to do with the accident. The other side should be paying everything. I want everything paid for. And unfortunately, it doesn't work that way.
No fault. Pennsylvania's no fault state. All right. Boy. So that's our limited tort, full tort, dribbly drobbly for the day. Hey, did you hear about Muffy?
Muffy.
Muffy's the little dog in Australia who got lost one day 9 years ago and was found. Muffy was found and was returned to her owner. She had one of those microchips implanted in her. They located her owner. She was on the run, on the lam, for 9 years.
I want to interview Muffy because the stories must be amazing. In the outback.
Oh, wow. Can you
fending off, you know,
that?
Aborigines and fending off feral cats and whatever else there.
So wow. Muffy, thank goodness was returned to her owners 9 years later, and as she was really missed, they still had her dog bowls waiting for her.
Aww. Is that, cutie pootie.
Did they really?
All right.
Wow, this is too much. Yes.
We have callers.
We have callers. Yes, we do. It's Court Radio on 107.9 WRMB. We welcome your legal questions at this time, 215-263-1079. Velvet is calling in from South Jersey. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. Good morning.
Is it really Velvet?
Yes, I am.
Wow. I might almost let you have two questions just for your great name.
Oh, well, thank you.
Go ahead, Velvet. Shoot.
Okay. I'm calling. I would like to know the difference between a trust and a will. And since I have two questions, which one would be better?
Okay, well, they're different. A will disposes of your property once and for all at the passing of the decedent. So you give a little to this person, a little to that person. A trust puts some restrictions on the dissipation of those assets. So a trust and a will are different. They can coexist together. You can create a trust which says, you know, I have 18-year-olds and I don't trust that they're going to take care of the cash the way I want them to. So I'm going to give it to somebody who I really trust, who's going to take care of it, and he's going to dish it out to them every couple years. They're going to get a set amount. That would be a simple trust. The money would be held in trust and then dispersed according to your requests over time, and there would be a trustee who would be responsible to protect those assets. So whenever you have a trustee who's responsible to protect assets and you dish the money out over time, that's what a trust does. A will merely says, I want these three people to get my assets in the following percentages, and you divvy it out in that fashion. So you can have both a will and a trust together, and it really depends. A lot of times trusts are used when we're dealing with children or people with handicaps who cannot take care of the assets on their own.
So with my life insurance policy, I could leave that in a trust since my children are minors.
You could take the assets of your life insurance and you could disperse them to a trust, and then the trust would pass those on according to your wills. Or you could disperse it to your, you can name your estate as the beneficiary of the assets of the life insurance. And then in your will, you could have trust provisions that the monies would be dispersed according to the provisions of your will. This is what you're talking about is not a simple will. It requires some advanced planning and some, you know, you have to appoint people to take care of these monies. But it's not that complicated. And you need to get with an attorney who will help you prepare these documents in the fashion best for you for taxes and everything else.
Okay.
But by all means, give us a call if you have questions or want these documents prepared at 215-227-2727. And I will never forget Velvet.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Don't forget to call us, 215-263-1079.
And I was in the midst of a sip.
So sorry.
That's quite all right. You know, here's another story that came up this weekend in my perusing of the world. Four crooked cops in Florida, or police officers, sworn to follow the law, broke it. And I don't get it. You hear these stories all the time, and I'm trying to figure out why these police officers who have the video and audio recording devices on their police cars, forget that, you know, like they lose their
Thank
mind.
Thank God for that.
Yeah, they lose their mind. They forget that everything they say and do is being recorded.
Right.
For posterity. And so
for our fun.
Oh, wow.
This young lady is driving along in Florida when her cat, who's sitting on her lap, jumps out of the car. And she stops suddenly, and boof, she gets rear-ended.
Ooh.
But she got rear-ended by a cop.
Ow.
And what did he do? He brought over his police friends, and mm-hmm. they and the four of them were standing. They first the thing they do is they put her out on out on the street. This person they just rear-ended, mm-hmm. and they give her a field sobriety test, and they wow. say, "Okay, you're DUI'd," and they pluck the victim of this car accident and throw her into the back of the police car. And then they stand out front and they talk amongst themselves and figure out how they're going to doctor up the police report, how she came from the left lane into the right lane and
what?
Stopped suddenly. They created out of whole cloth a story.
All on video and audio.
All on video and audio.
And what was the one comment you said that the guy made that was pretty funny, I thought? The one
he said, "I don't believe in making up stories, but when it comes to protecting a cop, I'll bend the truth." Wow. Wow. So he these four guys. And of course, as soon as something like this happens, the public defender's office has 17 cases that involve these four guys that all get flushed down the toilet.
Right. Right.
Now, I raise this question to you, though. It's amazing that they forget they have the video and audio. It's also equally amazing to me is how this gets to the press. Somebody had to leak this to the press. Mm-hmm. Who was it? It's someone in the mm-hmm. department who collects the video and audio and said, "Ooh, I'm gonna." You know,
well, it could be
I don't
that.
Know. What is it?
It could be that they that
the woman's attorney.
The woman's attorney yeah. requested in discovery
mm-hmm. right.
this material, and they
made it public.
They didn't. No, they didn't realize that this was a part of the package that was going to go out.
Right.
I don't know. Listen, if you're in Florida and you're listening to Court Radio
oh, Lord,
and you
mercy.
Know how they got mm-hmm. this material, please call us.
Mm-hmm.
Please
call.
Where,
what do they call again, Tiffany? 215.
215. Oh, to call us. I thought you were talking about what are they called down in Florida. I'm like, I don't know. 215-263-1079. That's how you can reach us to give us the answer
all
to
right.
that question or to ask your own question. And we do have a couple people on the phone. Caesar is calling in. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Doing
Hail
fine.
Caesar.
Thank you.
Hail Caesar.
Hail Caesar.
It's not.
I haven't heard that one since
yeah.
Elementary school.
No kidding.
All right, it's not velvet, but it's close.
All right,
come on. What's your question, Caesar?
My question is health care benefits for my employer. Here's the situation. I've been with this company for now 4.5 years, and I had the health care benefit package for 4 years. In the package, it pretty much said this. If your spouse, employer has benefits, we're going to charge you an additional $35. I told my wife, do not get her benefits. I'll take care of the family in the health care package for my employer. Okay, I thought at the time it was a reasonable price. So for all this time, I've been doing this. All of a sudden, this year, June, matter of fact, my employer says, we want documentation saying that you are physically married to this woman and that the offsprings are yours. I'm going, wait a minute. Why do you need my marriage license and why do you need my birth certificate of my child when all this time I've been saying this is who they are? You know, you had a Social Security number, so why do you need it? So they gave a questionnaire, and it was pretty much degrading questionnaire. It asked, are you still married to this woman? Are you separated? I'm like, why you ask these questions? I put you this information in the beginning. Then it asked, is this child yours or is it a stepchild or a foster child? Is this child is part of the court order saying you must have benefits for this child? We're like, why are you asking all these questions? Yes, this is my child. And here's the question that really took me off the most. Is your child of the age of 18 and pregnant? And, well, first of all, she's under 18, she's a minor, and she's betting them nowhere near being pregnant, okay?
That okay.
really took me off. But then he said, well...
Oh, Caesar, hold on. Hold on 1 second. Okay. So...
We get that you're ticked off, and I guess I have one question, and then I want you to wrap up and give me your question.
Okay.
Is this something that only came to Caesar, or did this package, these questionnaires, go to everybody in the company?
Everybody in the company.
Okay. So they weren't singling out you, per se. This is just their poorly crafted attempt, maybe, to reduce their coverage for health insurance company-wide. And one way they're going to do it is to see if they can ferret out people who are getting coverages that shouldn't be getting coverages.
Right.
Okay. What's the question, Caesar?
The question is can they charge me the retro pay for my wife? They say because my wife's company had benefits for her, and she chose not to take it, they're going to charge me $70 more, or already on top of what I'm already paying.
Well, all right, here's the answer to that. The answer is that, again, I say look to the written documents, and you got to look back at the employee handbook that gave you the right to have the benefits in the first place, and any other documentation the company sent out along the way, and see if they had the right to do that. You know, the answer is, from a contractual standpoint, if they didn't ask for it, if they didn't have it, they probably aren't entitled to it. But as a practical matter, we are at-will employees in Pennsylvania for the most part, and we don't have contracts. And if you get into a dispute with your employer about this, they always have the option to let you go, even though that would not be necessarily a good thing or a reflection on your ability as an employee. As long as they're not letting you go for a discriminatory reason, they can pretty much let you go for any reason at all, even a bad one. And so I would say, you know, step carefully, but the question may be better posed: what's in the documents that you've been given along the way? And you need to review those documents, and you need to have a conversation with them if you feel like they're not adhering to the terms of the contract, i.e. that document. The benefit of having an employee handbook, such as you described, is that it can be deemed by the courts to be an employee's contract. And whereas on most cases we're at-will employees and entitled to nothing more than whatever our employer decides to give us, when you have one of those benefits contracts, they can be seen as a contract. And so you need to review that contract carefully. And if you have questions about it and you're not sure about the answers, you need to have it reviewed by an attorney. And then the answer, I believe, will become evident from a review of that contract.
Okay. I'm pretty much following you carefully and everything. And I understand they can ask anything about me as an individual because I am an employee, but do they have a right to ask personal family questions?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
When my child turned 18, my health insurance company sent me a questionnaire because their obligation to insure my child ends at her 18th birthday unless she's currently enrolled in a postgraduate academic program, i.e. college. If she's in college, they have to pay for her till she's 21 or 25. So they send a questionnaire around to me asking those questions, because if she's not, they don't have to cover her any longer, or I'll have to pay for a separate policy for her. And so it's not wrong of them to ask questions, personal questions about your family, because it may impact on their duty to cover. And if they had only sent them to you, and that's why I asked you that question initially, I might think more, you know, I might think differently of this process. But if they're sending it to everybody, I would say it's probably okay. Not a guarantee, but probably okay. But if you have any further questions, you need to have those documents reviewed by an attorney. By all means, give us a call at your leisure, 215-227-2727, to bring them into the office so that we can take a look at them. But we do have to move on to other callers today.
Right, I understand. And that's basically what I wanted to know. Was it legit or not? Or were they just trying to...
I think it probably is, but for an absolute answer, you got to bring the documents in.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Caesar, and have a great day. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Good morning to Robin, who is calling in from Philadelphia. You are live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. Hi. I was calling in regards of a credit card settlement. agreement with a limited, I think it's an LLC company. Yes, it's an LLC company. And unfortunately, like, I've been making payments, $300 a month. And this month, I had switched bank accounts. And my employer didn't switch it all the way over. I called to inform them that because the payment was supposed to be due coming out. And they informed me that if I break my contract, that the money that I already been putting into the settlement will be non-void, and I will have, and they will pursue me in court. My question is that if they pursue me in court and a judgment has been placed upon me in Pennsylvania, because we do now we're in the days of paperless environment, will they be able to snatch my direct deposit?
Okay, well, the answer to that question is yes, after a long time. In other words, if they got a judgment, if they then pursued that, and that takes some time, and then if they then pursued the judgment to the point of execution, they could do something called a garnishment, where they garnish your bank account. But that's after much notice to you, won't be a surprise, and it'll be some period of time down the road. So you'll have some notice and opportunity to take some corrective measures. But if they try to sue you, then you need to get with an attorney immediately so that they could look at the deal you struck with them and try to interpret it in a manner in which you are benefited by that. And maybe, you know, they can't break the deal merely because you're late on one payment 1 month. You know, I have to say, has anybody listening today have anything good to say about a collection agency?
No.
They are the slimiest bunch of people. You cut a deal with this young lady. She honors the deal month in and month out at $300 a month. 1 month she's late because of these unusual circumstances. And what do? They start the threatening, the nastiness. You know, if I could spend all my time helping people like you just slap these collection agencies around, it would bring me such joy. It really would. But, you know, unfortunately, I can't. So, but,
and I'm 2 months away from being done with this.
Yeah, of course. That's exactly when they like to get you in their clutches, you know.
They're just sitting and waiting.
Whatever. I mean, it aggravates me that, you know, collection agencies are, I think that, you know, in the whole Obama, let's retool the economy kind of process, we should make collection agencies illegal. We should arrest all collectors and put them in the public stockade so we can throw tomatoes at them.
Yeah.
Guantanamo Bay.
I think we'll be ahead of that.
Awesome. All right. Thanks for calling. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
If you're just tuning in, this is Court Radio on Philadelphia's R&B station, 107.9 WRNB. We welcome your legal questions at 215-263-1079. We have Pat calling in from Philadelphia. Pat, good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. My name is Pat, and I have a question. My mother set up an estate when she passed away, and she had a will, and in that will she left my daughter like $10,000 to be distributed to her when she's 25. My question is to find out if she has to wait until she's 25 to get it. My daughter, I'm in a financial bind right now. My daughter is in 11th grade. She wants to go to college. We're looking if we could use some of that money for her college.
Well, the answer is probably not. But okay. if you have a shot at doing it, you'll have to file documents probably through an attorney in orphans court asking for the trust to be set aside. And the judges will look at your request, see if it makes sense and if it can be honored. And a lot will depend on how much money's in trust and what I mean, you know, for good reasons, for health,
well, education.
They could set aside the trust and issue an immediate disbursement of the funds.
Okay.
But it will only happen, you know, I assume there's a trustee involved.
Yes, somebody next to the older sister. My older sister couldn't do it because she's sick, mentally incapacitated. My the next to the oldest was set up to do this.
Okay,
and she was saying to my daughter, "Well, if you're mature enough at 21, maybe I'll get the money distributed to you."
Okay, so she can't.
She can't do that.
She has to honor the trust as well.
Right.
The question is whether she'll fight the request for the trust dissipation. And, you know, each of you would need to get counsel. You'd have to have an attorney. She'd have to have an attorney.
Right.
And then you'd go to court, and the judge would make the final decision.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, and have a great
day. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. We have Herschel calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, I grew up with a Herschel.
Really?
Yeah. And we used to, we called him Harry, but his real name was Herschel.
Yeah, everybody says that that Harry Herschel is coincides with each other.
Yep, yep. All right, Herschel, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, and you guys?
Awesome. Tell us what your question is.
All right, my question is this. I have some problems as, in my early 20s and mid-20s, where that I got stopped with no insurance. So in the state of New Jersey, I had a Jersey license at the time. They suspended my license, and just out of neglect and just out of stupidity, I never took care of it. I ended up moving to California for the last 10 years. I did get stopped once in California. I paid a lawyer $3,500 to pay whatever, you know, driving without, you know, while suspended, all that kind of stuff. Then to make matters worse, I went down to Miami on a vacation, and I got stopped there too. So now I have, like, issues in three states, and now I'm at the age where I really need to get all of this stuff taken care of. Is there any way that, you know, they have a magistrate to where, I mean, you know, someone that governs where I can take care of all of them at once?
No.
Or would that all be separate?
They're all separate. Well, first off, it sounded like you took care of the California one.
Yeah, I did take care of California.
Okay, so really you only got the Florida?
Jersey and Florida.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. No, you got to take care of these separately. There's no, like, you know, national license czar that you could go to who would sort this out. It really is, you know, it's like I once had a friend who had 10 years worth of, you know, bad decisions when it came to driving. And he had tickets in like five different counties. You know, Montgomery, Bucks, Philly, Chester, I mean, you name it, he got a ticket. And in Jersey, we literally had to go county by county, set up hearings, take care of the tickets, get them resolved. A lot of them got thrown out because the statute of limitations had run. Like in Florida, you might be able to get out of that ticket if it's old enough merely because the statute of limitations has expired. But you need to get with an attorney down in Florida to take care of that.
Okay.
Then you work your way back to, you know, hopefully if you get the ticket thrown out in Florida.
Well, the thing is, Florida said take care of the suspension in New Jersey. And then come back and see us.
Well, okay.
Once you get your stuff resolved in New Jersey.
Yeah. Oh, have you pled guilty to the Florida ticket?
No.
Okay, so it's still an open charge.
That is correct.
All right. Well, then that really can't be held against you in New Jersey if there's not been a finding of guilt or innocence on the Florida matter. So, and you've took care of the California matter. So, really, I guess that probably I would agree with that. You want to take care of the Jersey matter. Get your license reinstated in New Jersey. Do what you need to do. And then once you have a valid license, I guess Florida is saying that we'll take that into consideration and perhaps we will just let the ticket, you know, we'll expunge the ticket.
Okay.
So, you know, as painful as it is, I know when we're faced with bad news or difficult situations, more times than not, we'll stick our head in the sand and act
exactly.
like it's act like
years
it,
go past.
Yeah, act like it didn't happen. But you know what I would say is, call in New Jersey, get yourself an attorney there, and get yourself scheduled for a hearing, whatever needs to be done, and work on that and get that solved. And thanks for calling us, Herschel.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Peace.
Okay. All right, thank you. We have Sean calling in from Philadelphia. Good morning. You're live on the air with Court Radio.
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Doing
Hi,
fine.
Sean. What's
Hello.
Up?
Back in June, I got stopped in Virginia for reckless driving. I wanted to know, should I get a lawyer to represent me, or should I go up there by myself? My hearing is in August, was on August the 17th. I want to know, would they lock me up, or...
Yeah, I was going to say, the only reason to get a lawyer is if you don't mind spending a few days in Virginia.
Well, first of all, it's reckless driving, which probably holds some ramifications other than just paying a fine.
Okay.
So my advice would be you should probably seek the advice of an attorney, if only just to find out what the penalty is going to be and what's going to happen in court.
And I'll go one step further and say you'd be crazy,
yeah,
crazy to walk into that courtroom in Virginia by yourself.
Okay.
You want to get somebody who's been before that judge in Hokey Poke, Virginia, wherever
you're
going to
see
are.
A Yankee a mile away, right?
Yeah. You want somebody who's been
that
before...
Yankee behind bars.
You want somebody who's been before that judge a number of times, who knows their way around that courtroom, that can help you out, because they might not be able to make it go away, but they can certainly make it better for you. And you could take a reckless driving charge and turn it into, you know...
Right, something less.
Something less, a careless driving, or maybe even just some sort of disobeying a traffic sign or something. Somebody who, you know, has been before the police officers who arrested or who gave you the ticket, it'll definitely inure to your benefit. And now that we have a uniform driver's licensing compact that I think 49 of the 50 states belong to, whatever happens in Virginia doesn't stay in Virginia, my friend. So, you know, that ticket will come right up to Pennsylvania and will be as if you had it here. And it'll affect your license up here.
The points.
Okay, I'm going to ask you that.
Yep, there'll be points.
Yep, yep. So you gotta treat it seriously. Get yourself a lawyer down there and take care of business.
Now let me ask you one more question.
No double dipping. So sorry.
Bye-bye.
But thank you. Have a great day. All right. We have Kim.
I knew there was
you're right. Well, that was blatant. That wasn't even trying to hide it.
No,
it was just like, let
no
me ask you.
And his name's not Velvet.
Let me ask you another question.
Okay. I'm so sorry. All right. We have Kim calling in from Philadelphia with a question. Hi, you're live on the air with Court Radio.
Hello. How's everybody?
Hello.
All right.
Hi, Kim.
Hi.
What's your question, dear?
My car was involved in an accident because it was parked.
Okay.
And I was a transit van that hit it. And they said, hey, we're going to take care of everything. And
famous last words.
We went to the insurance company. The insurance company actually paid for the vehicle to get fixed.
Obviously,
and
not
they were
to your satisfaction.
For my rental, and when she told me she was going to pay up to a certain date after the 5th, they called me on the 15th and told me they weren't going to pay it no more than that to up to the 5th. Now, after I went to the adjuster and cussed everybody out and did everything I was supposed to do, she paid up until the 15th. And the car shop that fixed my car was supposed to pay the additional $400 because I got charged $800 to my credit card for a parked car that was hit. And the collision shop signed a piece of paper saying that they were going to pay me, and they haven't paid me.
Okay, so
now I did call Philly Lawyer.
Yeah,
because I'm a loyal listener. I called Philly Lawyer, and they said it's not. There's nothing they can do because it's such a small case.
Right. And here's what...
It would cost me more to get a lawyer than it would, you know.
Absolutely.
Hold on, Kim.
And sometimes that's the case. That's the sad truth is that, you know, if you've got an $800 case, it's not the type of case where you're going to hire an attorney to take you to court because the attorney might charge you $700 or $800 to do that. So you're stuck in somewhat, you're stuck in a situation where you need self-help. And what you need to do is go down to 34 South 11th Street, okay, which is Philadelphia Municipal Court, and you'll ask the young ladies or young gentlemen behind the counter to help you file a small claims complaint against the body shop. And for about, I don't know, $50 or so, you'll get your complaint filed, you'll have your day in court, and those judges will help you resolve your differences. And you'll get paid. It'll take you probably most of the day and a little bit beforehand to file the complaint. But it's the only way and it's the best way for you to resolve this dispute. Okay?
It also comes up quickly in a month.
All right.
So That's a good way to go.
Thanks a lot, okay. Kim. I hope we were able to help you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Peace. All right. Well, all that does it for another edition of Court Radio, fellas.
It always goes by so quickly.
Yes.
I know. There's the lights are still flashing. There's four or five people who didn't get their questions answered. Please call us back next Sunday where we'll be here again for another episode of Court Radio.
Thank you so much. Please do not touch the dial. Philly Speaks with E. Stephen Collins is coming up next. Much love to Brad Chris for being a wonderful producer of this show. Have a peaceful, positive, and productive Sunday. See you next week.
To download or hear more Court Radio podcasts, log on to 1079wrnb.com or mediafire.com/courtradio.